Hello and welcome to Let Me Touch Your Mind, the show where we try to get you to be something, do something, experience something, enjoy something. And there is a lot to enjoy. So let's just get right into it. Did you know that there is a show happening and they do, it's called Scottish Fiddlers, and it's a spring concert, and they've been doing it for a while, and there's a gentleman here to talk about it right now. I'd like to welcome Alistair Fraser. Welcome.
Thank you so much. You get me excited just hearing you announce it.
So let's talk about this Scottish Fiddlers. What is it? Stravaig? How do you say it?
Stravaig. It's a great word. It's a very Scottish word, and it just means to go on a wander. You know, the kind of thing you do on a nice day. Let's take a stroll, take a wander, and that's what we do musically. We take a wander into the beautiful traditions of the music and the dance of my homeland, as well as visiting the neighbors, you know. So it's a kind of a welcoming, let's go for a wander together and see what kind of mischief we can get up to.
I love that. So take me back to when you, the very first time you decide to have a concert like this.
Well, like this one here in the Bay Area. I was actually living in Sausalito at the time, mm-hmm. and there was so much interest in the music that I was playing. You know, I'm lucky enough to kind of have grown up playing Scottish fiddle music and all the associated dance music and the human expression that goes along with that. And mm-hmm. people were intrigued to know about the different dance forms. And so we started a fiddle club in Sausalito, actually, and then we got bigger, too big for my house, and then we met in various public spaces, and we decided, man, we got to just share this journey, and that's what we've been doing now since 1986. You know, it's inviting people to come and get an instrument in your hand and uh-huh. play this music that is designed for sort of communal gathering and expression, you know, and it's just the joy of playing music together.
Okay, so I have a question.
For all these years.
I have a question. So is there any difference between a fiddle and a violin, or is it just that the violin is just the more fancy way of talking about it?
Yeah, that's probably the question I get asked most of. You know, it's definitely an attitude of mind. The fiddle, in its common usage now, it definitely implies a little bit more freedom. Mm-hmm. You know, you're kind of more free of the written page. You know, I think of Stefan Grappelli and his incredible jazz fiddle. But, you know, when you really get to the top echelons of the instrument, the words become interchangeable. But it's the same instrument. It's the exact same instrument, which is a very powerful instrument. You know, you look across the planet, there's hardly a culture that doesn't express its soul in some way. With an instrument like this, the fiddle or the violin, whatever you want to call it.
Mm-hmm.
But, yeah, it's kind of an amazing idea, really. And it exudes a lot of power and a lot of passion and a lot of joy.
So when did you first pick up the fiddle?
I was eight years old.
Ooh.
And my grandfather's fiddle was sitting in the living room, and my parents thought, wouldn't it be good if somebody played that old fiddle that's sitting under the sideboard in the living room? And fortunately for me, at that time, there was a teacher. It was a new idea at the time. This teacher was coming into my primary school and was looking for students to teach violin. So I got the job, and it completely transformed my life, although I didn't think of that at the time. But it gave me, you know, a tool in my hand to kind of to go exploring with, and I loved it from the beginning, I would say. And I did classical music. I played Mozart. I played in orchestras and string ensembles and chamber music. But I found my calling in a way, and when I found the folk music of different cultures, especially my own, and expressing your own heart and soul. And so I got deeply involved in playing Scottish music.
Wow. So were your parents thrilled when you took to it so readily?
Yeah, I think so. you know, I lived in a house that was that believed in music in the household. You know, my dad was a piper, played the bagpipes. My mum used to sing all the old songs, and I used to, you know, you get called into the living room to play the latest tune that I was learning, and uh-huh. of course I would learn everything from old Scottish songs to bagpipe tunes to as I said before, Mozart. And then, you know, at that time it was a big band. My parents loved Glenn Miller, and so I'd be playing some of that, and I'd uh-huh. be playing some Stefan Grappelli, as I mentioned earlier on. So, you know, I just was lucky, I guess, to have this ear learning time at home, where you the kind of the concept was, you just, if you hear something and you love it, then you just play it. You don't actually need to get the music to read the music. And so I'm very thankful for that upbringing.
So did you ever just, like, you and your mom and dad just have, you know, like a family evening where you all would play music together?
Oh, absolutely. In fact, I mean, that's one of the things I love to tap into is I think that is a very common thing. If you look back through, I want to say humanity, the last few hundred years, people have gathered in each other's homes, mm-hmm. you know, to entertain themselves for centuries. It's kind of a very natural thing to do. And I actually used to, you know, I eventually went back to my violin teacher, and he found that I was playing Scottish fiddle music at home. So he learned a lot of the tunes from me, you know. And then he and I would go off and we'd play at old folks' homes together, and get the old folks singing the songs and whatnot. So I was very aware of the sort of the communal power of making music and mm-hmm. how we gather around it. And I think increasingly, you know, I think we do better when we visit each other in each other's homes, and we sing our songs and play our tunes and roll up the carpet and dance till 5 a.m, you know, and have kitchen jams and stuff like that. So that's what we're doing in the concert, the spring concerts. We just take that idea and we make it bigger and larger, and we put it, instead of in the living room, we put it in the concert hall, and we pretend that it's our living room. Mm-hmm. And I think people just, it feels good. It feels very natural to do that.
So how big is the fiddlers community here in the Bay Area?
We have a great community, you know. I mean, we've been growing it and investigating and adventuring together for many years, and people come and go. We've had 30 or 40 years of waves of new kids coming along and, you know, finding that this works for them, that, uh-huh. that they can express it, they can get fun in it. There's a tremendous peer group, which is really important for young folks, uh-huh. you know, to gather and find that there's kids their own age interested or close to their own age. So we have these waves of kids that have come through the fiddle community, and now many of them are, you know, older and have their own kids. They bring their kids to, so, and they're teaching, and some of them have become ambassadors of the music on a nationwide basis, you know. So it's a pretty healthy community that has grown, and we'll have like over 80 people on stage. And it's not just fiddles, it's string instruments, uh-huh, uh-huh. fiddle, cello, guitar, piano, people spontaneously dancing. We'll have song, flutes, you know, just the instruments that people go to. And I think our message is to the audience, hey, look, we're having a lot of fun here. Mm-hmm. This could be you up here. Come and join us. And I love the word amateur. You know, I think it's an often misunderstood word, but to do something for the love of it, mm-hmm. which is what amateur means, mm-hmm. is, I think, the best reason to do anything. And so you, at these concerts, you'll witness a lot of amateurs and some people in the professional bracket, you know, who are actually doing this for a living, including mm-hmm. myself. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. But it has the joy of doing it for the love of it.
So you mentioned that you have a lot of kids coming through. What's the youngest kid that's come up to you with, you know, fiddle in hand, all, you know, all wide-eyed?
Oh, my gosh. Well, you make me think of, I mean, it goes way back. I mean, I've had really young kids, you know, like 5, 6, 7
really?
8 years old coming.
With a fiddle.
And they just stand there and they go, like, okay, how do I do this? And then they just copy, you know, the way you learn a language.
Yeah, yeah.
Kids are really good at that. They get, if they're touched by it, they just pick up the instrument and start doing it. And they end up doing things that are, some of us would say were quite difficult, but they don't know it's difficult.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
So they just do it, you know, and which is great. It just sends a wave of possibility into the whole group. And we have older folks who love to be around that, and the young kids love to be around the older folks, you know, and get to learn from their heroes and whatnot. So, yeah, the whole, I call it a nurturing loop where you have the young and the old learning together. What better?
Well, with that, tell me more about the actual, is it a concert series? Is it over a number of days, or is it just one day?
No, we decide, you know, we just love it. Once we get going, we kind of maximize the possibility. So we do 3 concerts over the weekend in San Rafael, Santa Rosa, and there's a third one. And we just, you know, we build up the energy, and we have make a great weekend of it.
Okay, and so where is the festival happening?
It's all over the greater Bay Area. If you just go to SanFranciscoScottishFiddlers.com on the website, all the information's there and the tickets. And, jump on it. It's a great way to celebrate spring.
Okay. So that's San Francisco Scottish Fiddler?
Yes, Fiddlers. Yeah.
Oh, Fiddlers.
SFFiddlers.com.
SFFiddlers.com. And for people who maybe have young kids who are enamored with the fiddle, what can you recommend for, like, what's some of the advice you give to them?
Great question. You know, follow your passion. If the kids see something in this way, if you see their eyes light up, or you see them, you know, they want to dance, or they're motivated, they become animated when they hear the music, and it's such a natural thing again. Just encourage them, you know, give them a feel. I know lots of families that have started off kids at a very young age just by giving them a piece of cardboard with even a fake fiddle in the beginning, so they get the motion, and then they want a real one. And so it goes on, you know. But I think if we just remember to, if we see that light come on, feed it, you know, because it happens surprisingly often. And again, that infectious energy that you get from seeing other kids doing it, and you think, I want to do that.
Right.
You know? So, you can tell I love it, and I feel lucky. It's a privilege to be around that kind of energy.
I think so. So when you give, like, when the kids pick it up, you mentioned that you don't actually necessarily need the music to start playing. Did I understand that correctly? Like, you can just
absolutely
start.
Yeah. No, this, I mean, music in its innate nature is audible. You know, it's something that you hear and you copy. And yes, we have written music, and it's a wonderful tool to have written music. But the folk music of the world, largely, is not, you cannot write it down. It's like learning a language. You have to develop fluency in the same way that you learn from how to speak from your parents, you know, or your mother's knee, and so that you can copy your heroes, people that you like, and you just end up doing it yourself. And it's a gift for life, really. And then you can go and find the music, and you can play in the orchestra, and you can play, you know, in the classical music, and whatever way you want to express yourself. But having that whole spectrum is such a beautiful gift, to be able to play by ear. And just, you know, if you hear a pop song on the radio, then you can just go and play it.
Yes.
Or go play some Beatles songs or whatever, you know. It's there for you.
Well, for our listening audience, if you're interested in going to check out these this concert series, Friday, April 25th. You guys are going to be at the Veterans Memorial Theater in Davis. On Saturday, April 26th, you're going to be at Angelico Concert Hall, which is the Dominican College in San Rafael. And then on Sunday, April 27th at 1 p.m., you're going to be at the Jackson Theater at in the Sonoma County Day School. And if you want to find out more, you go to sffiddles.org. Is there any one last thing you want to leave our audience with?
I would just say, if you can find the time to come along, I guarantee you will leave with a spring in your step. And you, and boy, do we need a spring in our step these days.
Oh, you sure do.
There's something infectiously wonderful about just being around people who are playing music and dancing and singing that it's great to take home with you. And that's the gift we want to give out there. It's a wonderfully human way to spend some time.
Well, Alistair Frazier, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today.
And thank you. And thanks for having the information available for the Davis concert in San Rafael, Santa Rosa. Can't wait to be there.
Excellent, excellent. All right, people of Earth, this is your opportunity to go check it out and have a wonderful time. Yes, music is infectious and fabulous. And, you go to the sffiddles.org. And here's a little taste of what you're going to hear if you do go, because he's out there. So pretty. That's Alistair Frazier and Natalie Haas. It's from the High Reel set live at McCabe's. You can find that on YouTube. You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco, who's about to touch your mind right now. Well, Theater Rhinoceros, or Theater Rhino, has been around for a bajillion years, and there's constantly new people coming in and making the theater over to represent and reflect the community at large. Here to talk about one of the shows that's about to happen there, I'd like to welcome the effervescent Crystal Lu. Hello.
Hi, Marilyn. Thank you for having me.
Thanks for being on the show. So, Crystal, how long have you been the sort of like the backbone of Theater Rhino?
Oh, I mean, administratively, it's just me and John Fisher, basically responsible for every operation. And I've been there for, this is about to be 3 years. So, yeah, it feels like a long time and also a very short time.
Yeah. Theater, like these days, because everyone who goes into theater, you go into it because you love it, because you sure don't go into it for the money. So
yeah.
When did you discover that you wanted to be a performer?
Oh, I was 9 and my mom got me into it accidentally. Mm-hmm. I was an extremely introverted kid. And my mom really was like, oh, a theater summer camp will fix that. Mm-hmm. socially. And it did not fix me socially, but it did show me that theater, and at that time musical theater, mm-hmm. Is a really good way to practice being a person and like practice having human interactions with people. Mm. And that the first time I performed like with lights and like live accompaniment and in as part of an ensemble, mm-hmm. Was truly life-changing in that way. And in a way, like the past 20 years since that moment has been a process of me trying to find out why that made me feel so free. Mm. And trying to give the same experience to other folks.
I've got to say, I've seen you perform. For my listening audience, I've seen Crystal perform. And when you're out on stage, you are fearless. And you mentioned that you were an introverted child. So is there a big difference between Crystal, how Crystal feels when Crystal's on stage, and how Crystal feels when you're just a civilian?
Oh, yeah. I still consider myself an introvert. I love people, but I very much have to, like, step away and recharge by myself. Mm-hmm. And I think theater as, like, an adult and as a career, I stopped performing, or I'm technically on a break from performing. The last show I was in late 2023.
Mm-hmm.
It's a little different. It's a little different to do theater as a job or to perform as a job and to have that added context. And I like to think there's a balance now because a lot of doing theater, even at the community level, mm-hmm. where there is a level of obligation to it, you have to show up, and I believe like it's an actor's responsibility to show up and support their cast members and support their production team.
Yes.
There is a balance that you have to strike with not giving too much of yourself. But the craft part has always that's always been like the fundamental love that I have, is that practice of humanity and sort of like seeing you really get to like pull apart how people respond and what creates a human feeling and what creates a human emotion. And that has never left me.
Okay. So talk about this show that you guys have got coming up, or I don't even know if it's already started. Is it called Gumiho? Gumiho? How do you say it?
It's Gumiho,
okay.
Which is Korean for nine-tailed fox. It's a play that is in it that we're doing as a West Coast premiere.
Okay.
It's by queer Korean playwright Nina Kee. It's one of my favorite scripts I've ever read.
Really?
And yeah, it is. My tagline when I talk about it to people is it's about how messy Asian lesbians are. the identities are more complicated than that in the show. Mm-hmm. We have four Asian queer performers. Mm-hmm. Two of them are non-binary. So that in itself is like that having a space in theater where I've worked for 10 years that is about us, about Asian assigned female at birth people, mm-hmm. is that is very, very sacred to me. So aside from that, it is extremely funny. It is extremely heartbreaking at times, but it's about it's a story that is like on its face quite simple, mm-hmm. but I think it is in some ways harder to write a simple story than like to write a very complicated, you know, script. It's just a lot of very strong dialogue and a mm-hmm. lot of strong characters that are really meaty. That is amazing to be able to give that to Asian queer actresses, Asian queer actors, because we don't get to do that a lot. Right. Or maybe I live in a bubble where I certainly have not gotten to play characters that were specifically written for my identity and my experience. Mm-hmm. But also, it is a very beautiful human story about being able to get to an emotional place where you let people love you. And yeah, it is one of the hardest things I've done. I don't direct very often, and I certainly have not directed before when mm-hmm. I was also responsible for the administrative part of a company.
Sure.
But it's been incredibly rewarding, and I would not have given my time and energy overwhelmingly to something that did not mean very, very much to me.
So how did you find out about this play? How did it come across your desk?
Mm-hmm. I have John Fisher, the executive artistic director of Theater Rhinoceros, to thank for that.
Okay.
I personally, I have some sort of like culturally informed wound that makes me feel like at first uncomfortable when I encounter media that is in theory made for me.
Okay. I get that.
Which
yeah.
Is,
totally
yeah,
get
it's
it.
A little complicated.
Uh-huh.
But John, at some point in spring 2023, so 2 years ago, he is always looking for new work by queer playwrights, and he found this just by searching for queer Asian plays on New Play Exchange,
mm-hmm.
Which is like a database of like living playwrights' work, and they just opened like a new service for actors. I haven't quite looked into that, but it's a very active community, and there's especially because most I think San Francisco is lucky to have like several companies dedicated to producing specifically LGBTQ work, but mm-hmm. most theaters like are quite normative in that they are not trying to produce new or contemporary LGBTQ work.
Okay.
And so a lot of them end up on New Play Exchange. And Nina is quite prolific. She has several plays that just recently we were talking, and they were like, yeah, I read about animals in all of my plays. And I was like, oh, I didn't realize that. But yeah, John, several of Nina's plays are on New Play Exchange, like on their profile on there. Mm-hmm. And John was just like, I think he just sent it to me. He sent me the script for this and mm-hmm. was like, we should do a reading of this. And it's a play that whose like topics hit so close to home for me
mm-hmm.
that, but I was able to like realize that that was happening. And I was like, I think we need to have this. And so we did a stage reading, in June of 2023, with a cast of 6 or 7,
mm-hmm.
Local Asian, women and non-binary actors. And 2 years later, it's a full production. So yeah, even, you know, I hope he doesn't find this offensive. Like, my queer elders are looking out for me. My queer coworker is looking out for me.
Oh.
And for us. And like, I think that is, also a special and important part of this plays development.
Okay. So you're directing. Who are the actors and what roles do they play?
Okay. So the most central actor, and I think everyone would agree, is Rae Go. Rae is a non-binary Korean actor who has appeared as the titular character in Billy,
mm-hmm.
Which was in our last season. Which was an original play by John Fisher that was nominated for Best Overall San Francisco production at the BATSE Awards.
Oh, nice.
And Rae was also in the sequel to Billy Fallen earlier this season. And Rae is in every scene of this show. They play the central sort of protagonist named Cam.
Mm-hmm.
And Cam is the one who, through interactions with the rest of the characters, experiences this journey. And you see them be kind of a douchebag, and you see them try to grow from it. and Rae is wonderfully talented and entertaining. And they do not have much, like, academic, like, trained theater experience,
mm-hmm.
but I think that makes their performance in this particular show stronger, because it is, like, a show about them, and I like to say it's a show about to my actors. It's a show about you and me and us, and Rae has memorized 97 pages of script.
Wow.
And is absolutely killing it. Then there is Dom Refuerzo,
mm-hmm.
Who is a Filipinx non-binary actor. And Dom plays Hinju, sort of a best friend character, but much more complicated than usually portrayed. And Dom also plays a one-off character, a bartender. I worked with Dom as an actor in the original play Lizard Women at Awesome Theater mm-hmm. in 2023.
Mm-hmm.
And Dom is also just, like, I'm so excited to see what Dom does as an artist, like, in any capacity. They're one of the most interesting artists I've ever met. They're a musician and a vocalist, and their identity as a non-binary and trans person is very, like, is so, like, close to their work
mm-hmm.
and informs it in such a beautiful, interesting way. And I'm really, really excited to see, like, however they grow into their artistry. Then we have Zolbo Namkaidorj, who is a queer Mongolian-American actor. And she plays the characters Mona, Victoria, and Robin.
Mm-hmm.
So Zolbo and Annie, the last actor I'll talk about, share sort of like they portray a set of, like, characters and types who Cam runs into.
Mm-hmm.
Zolbo is so funny. and it's been, like, so cool to watch her take these sort of like one-off characters almost in a sketch capacity and like create these like really insidious ways that they operate and get under Pam's skin. And like just absolutely delightful as a person and as a comedian to work with. And then finally, Annie Wong, who is the only actor in this cast of four who was not in the original stage reading.
You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO San Francisco. We're talking with Crystal Liu about the show. And how do you say the name of the show again?
The show's name is Gumiho.
And you guys are going to have, we had a slight technical glitch. You guys are starting your previews, right?
Yes, previews are this Thursday and Friday with opening night on Saturday the 19th.
Excellent, excellent. And how long is it going to run?
It's going to run until May 11th, performing Thursdays, Fridays, Saturdays at 8 p.m. and Sundays at 3 p.m.
And that's at Theater Rhino. And there, I know that there's every time I have you on, there's always a new person who's never been to Theater Rhino. So where is it?
It's on 18th Street in the Castro, next to Molly Stone's, 4229 18th Street. And it's about a 10-minute walk from the Castro Muni, which is my favorite thing about it.
Excellent. Yeah. I like a theater that's in the neighborhood. And since we had that that slight technical glitch, did you cover all of the actors, or did we leave anybody out? I don't want to shortchange anybody.
Yeah, I think I was talking about Annie, who plays Jeanette, Bonnie, and Nancy. And Annie is also an extremely talented, I would say, dramatic actress. There have been moments in rehearsals where I've gotten to see Annie grow as an actor, and like incredibly intuitive listening to her scene partners. It's such a strong cast. I feel so fortunate to be doing this play, particularly with these people right now, especially as, you know, the world gets scarier.
Yeah.
I think it's important for us to have something to hold on to that is about our imperfection and our redemption and our ability to survive.
Excellent. And with that, where can people get tickets?
You can go online at therhino.org. And if you're on a desktop, there should be a button like right at the top that says buy tickets, and that'll take you to our ticketing site, which is external to the website, but it's pretty easy to find.
Excellent. Excellent. Well, Crystal Liu, I want to thank you so much for being on the show today. The name of the show is Gumiho. Did I say it correctly?
Yes.
Yay. So, and I look forward to seeing it because it's right in my neck of the woods. So thank you. Once again, thank you so much for being on the show.
Thank you. Hope you have a beautiful day.
You too. All right, people of Earth, this is your opportunity. Go check out a show that made Crystal it was a window into her soul. That's what art does. Art has the power to transform like that. In just a moment, we're going to be talking about another thing that's going to make you super duper happy. So stay right with us, okay? You're listening to 89.5 FM KPOO, San Francisco. That, my friends, is Vladimir Kosma and Les Gens dans l'Arc de la Tartine. Yeah, I can almost speak French. It's from the movie Diva. And it's a good movie, and I hope you enjoy it. And you know what else is good, or actually great? Idris Akgamur, who's here in the studio to talk about performing. Welcome, Idris.
Well, thank you so much for having me. And so this feels like old at home, coming to my KPOO. It's been here as long as I've been here, so long, but it's a fixture in the community, and that's what we need.
Well, so are you. You're a fixture, because I remember when I first started, I won't even say when, but I remember like seeing your ads and stuff and being like, ooh, that's pretty cool. So how long have you been performing?
I was taking music when I was 8 or 9 years old, but I got out here in San Francisco in 74.
Oh, okay.
So I've been out here in 70, got out here in 1974.
Okay, when you were 8.
Yep. Yes. And so that's been a while. And I landed me, that's when the Pyramids, my foundational band that I co-founded back in 1972, we relocated from the college where we were we had just come back from a year abroad, where we were in Africa and Europe.
Wow.
And so once we got back to Yellow Springs, Ohio, I stuck around there for about another 6 months where I was taught in the music department.
Mm-hmm.
And we headed out to San Francisco in 1974. Well, we landed in Oakland first.
Uh-huh.
So I was in Oakland for about four or five years.
Okay.
And then I've been over in San Francisco ever since.
And you've been performing the whole time?
The whole time.
That's nuts.
The whole time.
Let me ask you something, because this is something I ask all performers who do it for a living. When you tell your parents, hey, I'm going to, be a musician or be an actor, like, some parents are like, that's great, follow your bliss. And other parents are like, I'm worried about you. Can't you just get a job at the post office? Where did your parents fall?
The first one. They loved the fact that, they basically became my biggest fans.
Uh-huh.
And my father already worked at the post office, so he didn't need somebody following his footsteps to go to the post office.
Oh.
So they have supported me during this whole process.
Mm-hmm.
My mother was a teacher.
Uh-huh.
And we had a piano in our house, a little spinet piano.
Oh, okay.
So, she was always always supportive of my work. And I began, particularly, I was one of my first of my generation, first of my family to really leave the country and just go around the world, basically go to Europe and started performing with the Pyramids all over Amsterdam and Paris and France. And then we went to Africa for like 9 months, and we traveled from the tip of Africa, from Morocco, all the way down to Senegal, and landed in Ghana, where we stayed for about 3 months, and it became home. We were studying music,
mm-hmm.
performing with African musicians, learning the culture,
mm-hmm.
and being initiated in the secret ceremonies.
Ooh.
And then we went across to Uganda. We got to Uganda like the week after Idi Amin had come to power.
Wow.
Yeah.
So what
we were
was
only
that like?
We were only in Uganda for about a week.
Okay.
And then we went to Kenya, Nairobi. Well, we went to Kenya and we stayed out on a coffee estate outside of Nairobi.
Uh-huh.
It was a Kenyan who owned this coffee estate, but on the weekend he would bring tourists out from Nairobi to partake of traditional Kikuyu music, mm-hmm. dance, and culture. Kikuyu and Maasai.
Oh, okay.
Maasai. And then we stayed there for like 3 months, and then we headed out to Ethiopia,
uh-huh.
where we went to the historic tour, where you go to these very ancient sites like Lalibela, Gondor, Aksum, Homa, Queen of Sheba.
Okay.
And then we went to Rome and came back to Yellow Springs, Ohio. One of those things, It was a year gone, a year out of the States. I'm glad I was able to do that when I was, 21 years old.
Uh-huh.
God, because I would love to do it again. just take a year away is a really a real luxury.
Yeah.
But it's, when you're a student, you can do that.
Yeah, you have,
and you're only going around on, you know, they're giving you like a $300 a month stipend back then.
Uh-huh.
So you just paying your room and board, basically.
Right, right. But when you're that young, it's all an adventure. I did leave for a year just traveling around, broke the entire time. So, but it's something that it opens the world up to you. And before you leave, you think, oh, you know, like traveling just seems so exotic and out of reach. And then once you do it, you're like, oh, I could always just buy a ticket. Let's talk about this CD that I have and talk about what brings you here.
Well, you know, we basically a year ago, we had a performance at San Francisco's venue called The Lab.
Mm-hmm.
And we did this performance there. It's on a lab. The Lab is on 2948 16th Street.
Okay.
But we basically transformed the space into what I call my underground jazz cabaret. And so we had cabaret tables and seating and, you know, we had hospitality drinks and all that. But the main purpose, of course, is the art.
Yes.
And this was a collaboration with my long-term friend and former real collaborator, Rodessa Jones, and Danny Glover.
Wow.
You know,
The main hitters.
So it was a collaboration with my, I call it an orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like a 14-piece big band.
Wow.
You know, and it's not modeled on Sun Ra. It's modeled on, you know, on my own thing.
Uh-huh.
You know, but it's composed of a string section, two violins, viola, and cello, and two brass, trumpet and trombone, and then the foundational band of the Pyramids. And so we produced this event February Black History Month 2024, but the most remarkable thing about it is that we recorded it with 32 channel stereo recording, 32 inputs.
Yeah.
And we were using a very well-known recording engineer in conjunction with Frank Swart and this other gentleman named Chris.
Uh-huh.
And we basically, long story short, we made an album and a movie that hasn't been a documentary at the same time, but the documentary hasn't been released. But the album is now being released, and it's our record release party.
Nice.
And it's called Artistic Being, and it features Danny Glover, Rodessa Jones on spoken word, and my orchestra.
Orchestra.
Mm-hmm.
Why do you call it orchestra?
Well, it's named a little bit. You know, the pyramids in ancient Egypt. You know, the pyramids in ancient Egypt and the ancient symbol of life is an ankh.
Mm-hmm.
So I call it an orchestra.
I like it.
Yeah.
So, like, how long did it take to put all this together?
A year.
Wow.
It basically took a year because it was very, very. A very involved process.
Mm-hmm. Well, with 32 channels, that's,
yeah,
is
you got
to
mix it.
Different people, or
yeah, 32
crazy.
Inputs, mic inputs. So, fortunately, I'm on Strut Records, which is my record company, and it's a record company that signed me since 2016, and I have like this is going to be my fifth album through Strut. And Strut has been an amazing collaborator, amazing partner. Not like what we normally think, quote unquote, the record companies are, having in many instances having ripped off so many black artists over the years.
Yes.
But I have a new generation of black artists that have found a home with Strut Records.
Okay.
And they this album, it's a double vinyl album, so it's vinyl and CD, and it's going to be, it was released for International Record Day, which was this past Saturday, was the 12th of April. And International Record Day all around the world is celebrated, you know, all around the world.
Okay.
With people coming in and buying limited edition vinyl.
Mm-hmm.
So they released.
Yeah, vinyl's like back.
Yeah.
The vinyl's kids
very
love
much,
it.
Yeah, absolutely. So this has been released. It's just been released for International Record Day.
I love it. I love it. Mm-hmm. And so tell me more about the CD release party.
It's going to be at, as I said, it's going to be Saturday, April 19th.
Mm-hmm.
Doors open at 8 p.m. and the show starts at 8:30. And it's at the Lab, mm-hmm. which is 2948 16th Street here in San Francisco. It's right in the, you know, the Mission, between Mission, right off of Mission and 16th, across from the Victoria Theater.
Oh, okay.
Yeah,
I
right
was
across.
Trying to, like, go, you know, where is it? Where,
yeah, it's
where,
right where? Across, immediately across from the Victoria Theater.
Oh, okay.
And it's basically, we're going to have the orchestra playing.
Uh-huh.
Danny won't be there for this show, but Rodessa will be feature, will be featured on one track. And also, there'll be new music as well as music being performed from the release.
Okay.
From the release.
All right.
You know, and it's going to be a lot of fun. It's going to be a real San Francisco event. Get your tickets now, and you can call you can go to thelab.org, www.thelab.org,
mm-hmm.
for tickets.
And then where can people go if they want to find out more about you and the stuff that you've been doing and all your other CDs? Like, do you have an online presence?
Oh, absolutely. I have a Bandcamp page.
Okay.
Under Idris Akamore. And also I have a website, akamore.com.
Nice.
Akamore.com.
All
so
right.
That's another way to find out more about what it is that I'm doing.
Okay.
Absolutely.
All right.
Yes.
So, well, once more for our listening audience, because I'm sure people were like scrambling for a pen. Where, what day, what time, where do they get tickets?
Okay, well, where is going to be at The Lab, mm-hmm. which is located in the Mission at 2948 16th Street, The Lab. And tickets are available at their website, thelab.org. It's a wonderful space. And it starts, doors open at 8.
Okay.
And shows at 8:30.
And that's one time only.
One time only. On one time only night. One time only. And that's this Saturday. And we'll have albums there to sell and autograph. So there'll be a part of it. Will, at the end, we'll be autographing the albums and CDs. But I also want to mention that the band is the orchestra is going to also be at the San Francisco Jazz Festival this year.
All right.
I've actually been invited to perform with my orchestra, and it's going to be, we're performing for the and under the big tent, which is going to be Sunday, June 15th.
All right.
You know, and that's going to be an amazing day, and you can get those tickets at sfjazz.org for Idris Akamore and the orchestra.
Very good. Well, Idris Akamore, we are out of time. It has been a pleasure to have you.
Mm-hmm.
I wish it weren't radio so that people could see how you're dressed, because I love the music motif. It warms my heart.
Well, I'm glad to be here, and I'm glad I was able to warm your heart.
All right. Okay, people of Earth, this is your opportunity to go check out Idris Akamore. It's going to be fabulous. I'm going to play a cut off of the brand new CD. It's about time for me to ride off into the sunset. I won't be here next week, but the show will go on. So until next week, my friends, ta-ta, and toodly-doo.